Yeah.
What is up, everyone? We are actually live. Sorry, we had some technical difficulties this week. This is Jack Greenstock. You are listening to Growing with My Fellow Growers, a live podcast on YouTube. I'm going to have some panelists joining us tonight as I go ahead and introduce the regulars, and we have a special guest this week as well, who I will get to. But first, I'm going to pass it to Dr. MJ.
Yeah, hey, I'm Dr. MJ Coco from CocoForCannabis.com. We publish articles, tutorials, and guides on the science and practice of growing cannabis, and I'm excited to be on the show with Rob Smith today.
Thank you again for joining us, Doc. And again, sorry to the chat and everybody who's listening to us live. We are a little bit late. And sorry if you hear a little bit of a vacuum in the background. I am making some what people usually call Rick Simpson oil or RSO. Some people call it FSO, full spectrum oil. I just call it cannabis oil most times. But that's the extract craft source you're going to hear running occasionally in the background. After the vacuum turns off, it gets quieter though. But next up, we have Matthew Gates.
Yeah, hey everyone, this is Matthew Gates, IPM Specialist, Integrated Pest Management. If you're interested in that sort of thing, you can check out my science communication educational channel, Zenthanol, the same account that I'm commenting on, which, by the way, switch from top chat to live chat so you can see all of the various questions and comments people make. And yeah, I'm really excited to talk in this session.
Thank you again for joining us. And I want to remind the people in the chat, that live chat, if you do click that button, to tag at Cheap Home Grow or at Jack Greenstock, and that will tag me or tag any of the other people on the panel if they're in the YouTube live. If you see them chatting back and forth and you want to get their attention, that'll highlight them so they'll be easier to find your message and get to you and hopefully be able to bring you up on the show. Next up, Brandon Rust. How you doing over there?
I'm good. What's going on with you guys? I'm Brandon Rust. You can find my social media page at Rust Brandon. I'm the owner of Bokashi Earthworks and the cultivation director at Majestic Craft Cannabis in Oklahoma. And I have some other stuff going on too, building a new farm.
Looking forward to all of that, but we'll keep it short so we can get to our guests. Aaron the Grower, you're up next.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing a little bit more about Rob. I've had just a brief conversation, but it was all about me, and I'm definitely looking forward to hearing about him. Thanks for being here, Rob.
Next up, so I don't go to him last like I normally do, but always appreciate his time here, Kyle of Predicative Breeding.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Glad to be here. It's nice to have a guest. I'm happy that Rob's here. Yeah, if anyone's looking for good feminized seeds, you can feel free to go to my website at pbreeding.com. Basically specialize in that area. And yeah, if you want to check out any of my social media, it's Predicated Breeding on all social media platforms. And I'm excited to see how tonight goes.
Looking forward to it myself. Last on our panel that's with us so far, we've got the American one.
Hello, Jack and panel and everyone in chat. It's good to be here finally this week. I apologize for my missed last 2 weeks, but I'm excited to be here. And it's always good to get some new blood on the panel. Rob, glad to be to have you with us. And yeah, that's about it.
Awesome, awesome. We did miss you those last 2 weeks, but we totally understand if you need some time away or if you just get a little bit too messed up and forget about it, which we totally understand that as well. Last but certainly not least, our special guest this week, Rob from Homegrown Helpers. How you doing?
What's up, everybody? How are you, Jack?
I'm doing well. We're happy to have you this week. Can you tell us a little bit about where to find you?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's been a long time coming. Shane has been bugging me to get on the show, and it's long overdue. So I'm glad to be here. Glad to be here. So the most important project right now is the Homegrown Helpers, my podcast, where I interview home growers and bring tips to the masses, kind of like you guys are doing right here. People mostly know me from Atlas Plant Trainer before this, and the shirt that I'm wearing was my second business in the cannabis industry, my trimming machine rental business, which is located in New England. So been doing this for quite a while with a bunch of different projects. I'm the executive producer of GrowCast, and our membership program, mygrowpass.com, which is open for new members right now. So lots of places to find us, find the work that we do and the education that we're trying to bring to everybody. So
awesome stuff. I know that some of the panel members have actually been on the Growcast. I think Dr. MJ is even a regular over on one of your guys' shows, like Ask Dr. MJ maybe.
Yeah. Dr. Coco is a regular for our members on Growcast, and he was just in our Slack channel, our Slack community earlier today, hanging out with those guys. If you want to check out any of the stuff that we have going on, it's pretty much the link tree, like in our Instagram bio, it's linktr.ee/growcast. And that's where everything that we do is right there. Aaron, the grower, delivered a great interview that kind of, you know, sometimes I get too busy talking about cannabis and growing cannabis and we lose track of time. And like, you know, you look down and hours gone by when that's really all you have booked. And that's kind of what happened with Aaron and I. And I bet there's a part two coming up shortly after probably the harvest season, right?
No doubt, man. I look forward to it. Definitely. Once things calm down, I'll reach back out to you. We'll do
it. I look forward to it as well. Time flies when you're having fun, that's for sure. Hopefully tonight it feels a little bit that way at least. We're going to be talking about some fun stuff and maybe some not so fun stuff. Because
well, shit, we've already been on the air for 15 minutes, right?
Well, not technically. We should have been on for 15 minutes, but we were a little late getting here. So I think we've only been on for like five.
Oh, I count.
That said, I wanted to give our listener who wrote in this week and asked us if we would be able to go through and talk about at least one plant we liked growing and one plant we disliked growing and maybe why. And I think that it's a good topic for home growers and as well as commercial cultivators as well. I know Brandon Rust has talked about some of the pheno hunts he's done in the past, and we may have even talked about this on episodes in the past, but unfortunately a lot of our earlier catalog was deleted. So I guess first I'll pass it over to our guest this week, Rob. Do you have any plants that you like? I guess we'll all start off with a positive one because I think it's right to start on a positive note.
I've definitely met more plants that I love to grow than the ones that I don't like to grow. I probably could answer that question a whole lot easier. My favorite to grow was probably the first strain I ever grew. It was a Midnight Oil, more known in the Northeast, especially Maine. But the first time I grew it, I had six plants under 3,000 watt HPSs, and I got 15 ounces out of each plant. Or like just over 15 ounces out of each plant. So it was super easy to grow, could take pretty much whatever you threw at it for nutrients, and you know, easy to train, short, stocky. And anybody that knows me knows that I like to train my plants. So
definitely. I think your old business would insinuate that you also are a big training focused guy, but I love the name. I mean, the Midnight Oil, you can literally say you're burning the Midnight Oil. That's yeah, like an expression.
Absolutely.
Cool name for that.
Yeah. And it was a clone only strain that a friend of mine had kept around for like 15 years. And he was the guy that kind of, you know, he's my caregiver. And, you know, before I start growing, and then taught me how to grow and got me into it, and actually gave me my first patient too. So I know I owe an awful lot to him.
That sounds like an awesome thing. I think one of my favorite parts about the cannabis community is the caregiver aspect. If it's legal in your state, I think that's one of the most powerful things, to have that direct relationship with the cultivator and the patient. You can get a really good understanding of what helps them best, what's their best medicine, because oftentimes it's not what grows the best, like we were just talking about. Sometimes it's that one that's a little finicky or small yielding or really stretchy and a little bit tough to manage. But if that patient really loves it, it might be worth keeping around sometimes, or trying to breed it into something that's a little bit more manageable. And speaking of crazy plants, I know, Brandon, you got a ton of space to grow some massive plants over there. Do you have any plants that you just felt like, man, I really loved growing that was a great plant for one reason or another, that stood out to you, other than the Limarilla? Because I think everybody knows that's going to be your natural go-to. You're on mute.
I have another variety. That's the Limarilla crossed with the San Diego Mountain Kush, which is a different variety that I made. Was the Purple Kush crossed with Grape God. That plant was a really, really huge yielder. And the seeds that I popped, I chose one, and that's one of the ones that I'm growing right now. I love the terpene profile. I love growing it. but it, like, there's just some varieties, like Trainwreck, for instance, that don't, that I love growing, Gorilla Glue, right? That are, that just go all over the place. They're all over the place no matter what. Like, they just need to be trellised and or staked up. So my favorite plants to train, favorite plants to grow are the ones that are really short and stocky, that are able to hold up their own support and weight. Those are, I have like an ideal stature when it comes to my, what plants I like to grow, especially in a commercial setting. But you can't always get that, you know, you can't always get the same exact plant structure across the board and get all the different terpene profiles and different colors. And, you know, so you just have to work with them. Some require extra training, some require earlier pruning, some require less pruning. It just, it's all dependent on your cultivar.
Less trimming in some cases. Some people really like that, the trimmers especially. Kyle Breeder, I know you've got a bunch of different work over there. It's hard to pick your favorite children or anything like that. So I'd imagine as a breeder, it's hard to pick your favorite cultivar. But ones that, what is one that you've really enjoyed growing recently?
Yeah, I'd have to go with, I don't mean to sound like cliche, but New England Rock Candy, man. I mean, she's just, you know, overfed, underfed. I mean, she's just all around just handles it. I mean, I've even had, during the winter, last year, I had some issues with ducting, and basically, like, the fans kicked on and was, like, blowing the winter air into the tents, and I woke up, and, like, basically everything almost died except her, and she was just, like, withheld freezing temps for a good amount of hours. Yeah, and everything I cross her with just turns out pretty beautiful. She's just real vigorous, real healthy. And yeah, that's, I'd have to say that's probably my favorite strain for sure.
That sounds awesome, man. I mean, you can't beat resilient, right? That's always a great trait. As far as resilient goes, I want to pass it over to Matthew Gates and the IPM work that you've done in the past few years in cannabis specifically. Have you noticed any cultivars that stood out as like, wow, that plant is just particularly resistant either to pests or mildew or mold or anything specific like that?
Not really conclusively, if I'm being intellectually honest. Usually,
and that's what we want.
Yeah, right. And to be quite honest, usually I'm being called in for damage control. So in circumstances where that was not really the case. But in fact, I was just getting with my buddy who is tuning in right now, possibly, who he sourced some cultivars. I think we talked about this earlier because he's growing up in the sort of a Bishop Inyo County area, sort of in the high deserts of California. And they were growing some pretty good, in my opinion, environmentally hardy plants. I remember earlier we were actually sort of supposing that certain cultivars that they were growing might not be particularly great for the very high heat, sort of high desiccation, low humidity area. But they were growing Gorilla Glue number 4, Skittles, Blueberry Muffin. They had a Purple Urkel and a Great Ape. Yeah, that's right. I just actually called him while you were talking with Brandon to confirm all of this. And they all did really well, to be honest, in that sort of grow condition outdoors.
Wasn't there a human pest in that grow that ended up
they were
bringing it to an early conclusion?
Yeah, they were robbed. So, you know, you got
to... That fucking sucks. I'm sorry to hear that.
Be careful for all of the various pests, the small ones and the big ones. So one other thing I'd like to say on that topic, since I am an IPM specialist and it's a thing near and dear to my heart, I feel as though I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that plants that miss, and we've talked about this earlier, plants that don't have the gene cassette that allows them to produce THC, those cannabis plants that don't have that, that are kind of bred for the CBD hemp market, they lack certain resistance genes that are also on that gene cassette. So the same sort of like, I guess, segment of DNA, or rather, am I saying that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I think SNP.
Yeah. But basically, like, that also controls the THC all the genes that are important for that synthesis. There are also genes on that same sort of like strand, segment that are also important for resistance to like fungal pathogens in particular. So like your Fusarium and your powdery mildew, and medicinal genomics has looked into that quite a bit, and they're creating PCR assays that you can utilize to tell whether or not your cannabis also lacks these various traits and uses indicators to avail that. And I think that's a really important thing. And I'm very curious and cautiously optimistic about this technology becoming democratized so that more people can utilize it at home as well as in commercial facilities.
I know that he's making his stuff more affordable with his PCR testing. And I also know that, like you said, it's kind of interesting to see that certain hemp is more, the thing that I saw most often or in the research was the powdery mildew. And a lot of the hemp was getting hit with powdery mildew because it didn't have that, like you said, the genes that were responsible for making THC, which would have made it more resistant, which shout out to Kevin McKernan over at Medicinal Genomics. He does really amazing work. Just really, really cool stuff. I want to give another person who does really amazing work a shout out and an opportunity to jump in this wonderful conversation. Dr. MJ, do you have a plant that stood out to you as something that was just really fun to grow or easy to grow that you liked a lot?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that. I mean, I like to grow plants, and cannabis plants just in general are fun to grow. I mean, they can grow really vigorously. They're usually fun to train. They're very responsive. So we're kind of lucky as gardeners, I think, in general. I mean, there are some plants that are just pure pains in the butt to grow as gardeners. And we don't have one. We have one that's generally pretty fun to grow. I think my favorite plants, just in terms of growing, again, because it's a different question if we're thinking about smoking or using or any of that stuff, but just in terms of growing, blueberry has been one of the fastest sort of plants up through the seedling stage and one of the most vigorous sort of vegging plants. And I really enjoy that too. Actually, both the plants I have growing right now, I'm growing Shining Silver Haze too, is just, they're fun plants to grow from seed. And I do prefer sort of the experience of growing plants from seed as opposed to getting clones. Clones seem to just be a little bit more stuck in the mud. Seedlings have like a natural vigor, a spring in their step. For strains that are not good or strains that have caused me problems are autoflowers that take too long before they start flowering. That's frustrating because with photoperiod plants, you can always just sort of flip them when you know they're gonna need to be flipped because you're gonna run out of space. But a couple of times that I've grown autos, and you guys remember me talking about the plant that I was going to have to call in the SFAC because it just wouldn't start flowering. And it just, I mean, it like went 4 weeks longer than I thought it would before it started flowering, and it got too big and it was just sort of a pain in the butt. So autos that take too long and end up becoming too big would be the plants that are sort of a pain.
In that dislike category?
Yeah.
I want to give the American one a chance to do his likes, and then we'll go over to Aaron the Grower last, and then we'll talk about the plants. If anybody wants to voluntarily basically rag on a plant or share about one that didn't work well for them. But the American
one. Oh, yeah. One. I got plenty of both. Well, not plenty, but I got one that I don't like. But the one that I like, the one that I like is I have this time wreck that I've kept a long-ass time because it's almost impossible to not make it take root when you take cuts off of it. It's unbelievable how quickly it roots and how vigorous it is. And as well as if you even get it in flower and shit goes south, the plant still produces and it still has killer. It's almost like when it's not happy that it does. It seems like it gets terpier and perhaps even more potent when she's not happy. But most of the time she's just an easy grow straight through and through. And I also like, I have my Godiva and actually the Godbud too. I like when you grow this stuff outside and you get them pink pistils. That's always cool. And I grew out a bunch of mutant plants, the ones that have like the extra leaf in the middle or buds where they shouldn't be. I always love growing those. Not that I have any cuts of those, but when they pop up, I always am intrigued.
I had that on a Chernobyl from Subcool. I called it like my middle finger pheno because you got like all your leaves going this way and then you got like the one that's like facing the opposite way and it kind of like looked like it was flipping you off.
Yeah, I had one plant that had it all over, like two blades in the middle, three blades, ones that had a stem coming up out of the middle with a leaf blade on it, all on the same plant. It was really bizarre, but yeah, that's what I like. That's what I like.
That's some cool stuff. I've heard that can happen from kelp or other hormone that can be introduced, but it also can just be genetic most times. But Aaron the Grower, what's one that you love or like?
My favorite right now would have to be Pink Lemonade number 2. That's spelled A-I-D. Lemonade is spelled A-I-D, so not A-D-E. Number 2, Breeder's Cut from Anunnaki Genetics that I allegedly might have gotten from Power Meds over in Michigan. And it absolutely is the most vigorous. It's pink. The buds are like straight pink and dark purple, and the terps are like straight out of, it's like, it goes from artificial watermelon when you harvest to like deep earthy pink lemonade when you're smoking it. My least favorite, I would have to side with kind of what Brandon was talking about, where he said that where the branches are all lanky, and specifically Gorilla Glue. I found a couple of strains that have been bred using Gorilla Glue that kind of capture that sort of chocolate terpy that kind of train wreck chocolate terpy profile, but that are a little bit more hardy. So I'd have to, I got rid of Gorilla Glue a couple of years ago because it was so, I was losing so many branches every time. And it was just, it's so hard to stay on top of with the wind outdoors.
Yeah, Breeder Steve talks about that's one of the things he selects away from because he's a field grower. He doesn't have the time to go stake up plants or even trellis them. He wants them to be able to stand up straight in the wind and survive the storms and the wind and all that stuff and be able to produce in that environment. Because if you want to be able to plant it with, like he does, like hectares worth of plants, just drill press seed and let it go. And he said for the first few weeks when you do it, that's that. You don't even have to water them because that taproot shoots down so deep, just touches the water, and they're really easy to take care of down there.
That's what I'm hoping for when I get these cuts from Jodry, that OG and that F1 Royal. I'm like going to put a bunch of those outdoors out here because they're supposed to finish real fast and be mold resistant. And that's kind of like the only way that you can grow cannabis out here. They have to be able to be supported because the super high winds, like, dude, it's like if you went outside right now, it's so windy. And like, I have one plant left out there that's not finished to Gorilla Glue. It's just all over the place.
You better believe you're going to be like, you're going to go out there one day and it's just going to be a little bit too heavy. And all of a sudden, well, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it was part of a breeding project anyway. So I should just go out there and cut it down. But I just wanted to finish the last of the seeds, let them ripen up.
So that makes them even heavier.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
They don't make as much bud though when they're making seeds. You get a lot less bud and more seeds. So like I'd say as far as weight, when I weighed the entire thing when I seeded a plant, I actually got less weight on the actual plant, even though the seeds are fairly heavy. That's just my personal experience.
Yeah, I did the TK times TK NL5 hay from AK Bean Brains. That plant like exploded in my backyard. I literally had it in a like a 5-gallon fabric pot, and I dug like a little earth pot and just stuck it in there and then covered it up with some more dirt. And it ended up being like 8 feet tall. But I pollinated it all the way from the very beginning of the first like, you know, 3 weeks. So it stacked huge, crazy colas of just nothing but seed. You know, so it's really easy to shuck through because you know.
I like all the AK Bean Brain stuff that I've run so far. He's solid.
Has anybody grown Chem or Chem Sis? Because that's one of the Gorilla Glue parents, and Gorilla Glue is notoriously floppy. And I heard somebody complaining on another podcast about Chem being like when it gets too much weight on a branch, it just snaps off. It sounded to me like they had hoplite and viroid personally, but I've also heard people just say chem, for whatever reason, doesn't want to support itself, depending on which cut you have, because the chem 4 is really huge producer, bulky, and it supports itself, but then like chem D and chem 91 might be a little different. I'm curious, has anybody grown those?
Yeah, I would say that that it's not as bad as Gorilla Glue. I think if you look at like some of the Thai genetic lineage attached to the glue, you'll find that that's where the lankiness comes from. But I'll say this about chem. It can be such a heavy yielder that it will crunch. It'll do the same kind of branch breaking, but it's not as bad.
Yeah, ties can get really crazy. Kyle, you grew, was it Kerala? Was that from Thailand? Or maybe some other ties that just got super crazy, like octopus, 8+ foot long stalk. You're muted. I don't know if you're still here with us.
Yeah. So, I don't know, a couple of years ago, I went on this heirloom / landrace kick, and I had some Kerala, I had some Highland Thai, and a bunch of other stuff. But it was definitely the Highland Thai, and I think it was an interesting endeavor trying to grow that indoors because, I think I turned the flower on or flipped the switch when it was like, I don't know, 3 feet tall, and it like times 8 itself. So it ended up being like, I don't know, I think like 15 feet by the time I was done. And that was just me. It smashed into the roof of the tent that I was growing in like basically overnight. And then I had to put the pot on its side, and then I let it hit the roof again. And then I had to put the pot on its end. So it basically looked like a big, like a number 7, but then like kind of grew back up. And it was just like this whole thing. But yeah, it was like, and then I had to put it outside. But long story short, it was like 22 weeks, and the trichomes weren't even cloudy yet. I ended up having to like, I mean, somewhere, but there was still, you could tell, like, definitely still had a ways to go. But
I've heard that some real landrace Thai does never clouds.
Some people have told me that. I wonder. It's interesting because it seems like when I've seen those, they just keep on like foxtailing and like budding more and more and more and more. Yeah. And if the weather, or if you're doing it indoor and like the weather is never bad enough to come kill the plant, it'll just kind of keep growing with like little buds.
Have you guys ever heard of people multi-cropping off the same plant? Like, cause that I saw somebody do that, but it was probably like 15 or 16 years ago when I was first started. This dude was growing this plant, and he would cut buds off and then would grow new bud sets and continue flowering. I've only ever seen it one time.
Twisted Roots. Shout out to Twisted Roots. He does a multi-harvest. I don't know if the buds finish. Yeah, he does like a top layer, bottom layer, and then like third, lower kind of thing. But I have heard people do what you're talking about, Brandon, where they harvest some and let it just stay out there for a long time, and then it rebuilds buds, and they can get a sort of second harvest off the same plant. But I think you have to have pretty good weather and not have a harsh finish to your season like most people do. And Matthew, the seeds I gave you a while back were from Thailand. I think I gave you a few of each one from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. My buddy went and handpicked from some, and he also had some from Thai Stick. But the reason I haven't popped them myself is because I only have 5 feet of headspace. And as Kyle just described, I would never be able to manage that plant in my grow space right now. So I'm looking forward to popping them in the greenhouse, though, see what they can do.
That'll be very cool to see, honestly.
Yeah, and it's crazy out here on my next pheno hunt.
Yeah, you said you were going to go pretty crazy, weren't you?
Well, I'm doing a small one to start off, but next spring I'm going to try to do a huge one. But I almost all the stuff that I popped was a Kush cross. So I'm expecting nice short squat little, you know, plants that have wide broad leaf sets, and then that produce like those golf ball size little dense nugs.
Rob, I know you're our guest this week. I don't want to make it just like a normal panel week. I want to make sure we get back over to you a little bit. If you were doing a pheno hunt like Brandon or myself or a few of the other guys are getting into, what would be some things that would make you be absolutely against keeping certain plants? Like if you're like, oh, when I see this, I'm like, I don't want that at all.
I'm definitely against the tall and lankiness. The stableness, I mean, a home grower is going to naturally put a plant through some stress, and looking for something that they can reliably not treat the best and still have good outcomes is really important to me when looking for that one plant. The structure, like everybody else has said, you know, is important, but stability and kind of testing it out and growing it out and making sure that it's a good outcome 100%
of the
time.
So when you say stability, do you mean like I have 10 phenos and I want them all to taste like 10 blueberry? Or when you say stability, like sexual stability of the plant, you don't want it to reverse into like a monoecious plant where it's got both male and female parts in the same plant?
Stability when you said lankiness.
What was that, Matthew?
You said, well, you mentioned lankiness, so I thought you meant like physical stability.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant, was the physical stability.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
You know, I mean, we've all grown tall and, you know, hardy plants, but not all tall plants are hardy and not all short plants are hardy, you know, so the stability and being able to support the plant, not just how it necessarily grows, but the strength of it.
And my Atlas plant trainer supports my plants more than I think the plant itself does sometimes. I'm sitting here listening to you guys, and I understand it for outdoor growing, but talking about the plant supporting its own way, I think that without, you know, the Atlas plant trainer or some other similar sort of device serving the same function, my branches would break off under their own weight or at least not be held in the proper position. So I think that depends on sort of how you're training and whether or not it's practical to use a lot of training aids in your space. And I definitely understand that's a big different thing when you're growing big plants outdoors than when you're growing just about anything in an indoor setting.
When plants are like that, when like any kind of plant, cannabis or some other plant, where it's like, you really got to support that plant. Branches breaking, I just feel like, come on, man. Do your job, like pick yourself.
Well, yeah, I mean, I talk to the plants. I'm like, you silly plant, can't even hold yourself up anymore,
right?
you got to realize that's what they're being bred for. They're being bred for like giant, massive flower clusters, and at some point, they're going to need some help with that. And there's a lot of other plants that, you know, farmers need to help out and support the weight of the fruit or other things like that. Or it won't get to be sort of the best condition. So we've bred these plants beyond where we can just sort of expect them to do all their own work.
But I've grown a couple strains that I can think of, like my train wreck cut, that could hardly hold itself up in veg. You know, the there was no girth to the branches. And as soon as they got long enough, they would just flop over. Really,
yeah, okay. Well, that would be a different... I'm right. Talking about the weight put on in
flower. You absolutely want to support that. But, you know, I'm looking at the stability of, you know, a branch being able to...
Had that. So, I mean, I'd just be curious beyond thinking about the structural stability of the plant in terms of strain... you know, grow style, nutrients, the availability of silica, for example, to the plant, big impacts on how structurally sturdy they are during the vegetative growth.
I definitely notice a difference when using silica or a soil that has some sort of silica source that the plant can take in over time, like being able to bend the plant over, and it's like sort of, I don't know if turgidity is the right word, but like it's really flexible and it doesn't seem to snap, where if I'm not using as much silica in veg, it won't, you'll literally be able to bend the branch and snap it off, where some you can dip it all the way down to the soil and tie it wherever you want it and it is just fine.
What's everybody's preferred brand of silica?
I use potassium silicate. It's also, I guess, known as Agsil 16. You can get it from lots of different companies. I buy 50-pound bags of it for the facility. I use that every 5 days as a foiler. And it's not just for the silicon potassium, but it's also because the pH of that stuff is really high and it works as an integrated pest management foiler application as well. So there's actually science that talks about the use of potassium silicate for foiler IPM to fight fungal pathogens. So it's kind of like a dual purpose.
How high is the pH when you're foliaring with the spray?
It's probably around 10, at least 10, maybe a little bit higher.
I just want to remind everybody who's here.
Be aware of with it. It is very alkaline, that alkaline pH can actually be beneficial for some IPM uses in a full year application as well.
Do you do another application to offset that, or you just leave it at 11 on that?
Oh, well, see, typically PH, in my experience, for four year applications, it's never been an issue. The thing that I see overdone is the amount that's used could cause problems, or spraying with the lights on, or with under too intense of a light. Those are the problems that I see mostly associated with foilers.
Because I did see a
wrench too. I use it several times a week.
Okay, I saw a presentation where they were just pH in the water, nothing else, as IPM, and they were doing like a hit with past 11, and then they would come back with something that's lower to, you know, like offset it.
Yeah, that can be effective against WPM. Usually you'd add a wetting agent, though, not just pH the water, but yeah, you can do that. You can add just a wetting agent and pH, a really high pH, to take care of WPM.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons baking soda works really well too. It changes the pH, and then it has the bicarbonate, I believe.
Is it sodium bicarbonate? Is that what baking soda is? Something like that?
It could be. I'm not 100%.
That's one for Google.
Pretty sure that's baking soda.
Before we get too off track, one of the reasons I hate growing the Bruce Banner plant I have is because it's all flappy, and without some sort of support, it's just an impossibility. The buds would be on the floor underneath the pots, not even on the dirt level. They'd be underneath, you know what I'm saying? And that is just so annoying to me. I'm with Breeder Steve. If you could get a plant that will hold itself up and still make the nugs that you want, that's what I would hope for. But I'm living with it because it's really good. And I crossed it with stuff, so I'm going to try and make it better.
Shout out to Doja DNA. His stuff is all like that. It's like everything I've grown from him, I've never had to use a trellis, never had to use stakes. It just like gives that like vicious, like wide, just super upward, vigorous growth. It holds big fat buds on the top of the branches, never breaks off. So
it's plants like that that put the APT out of business, man.
The APT is going out of business anyways, man. It's all good.
No, I'm teasing. But yeah, I mean, again, I sort of like that, being able to put the plant. I really love plants that are easy to train, that are sort of, when you top them, the branches will grow out more than just sort of trying to bolt straight up again. Those kinds of things are what I would look for. Although I guess I just haven't had a plant that's been truly flopping around during veg. And I don't know, I think I might attribute that to silica.
Matthew, I want to jump back just a little bit. We were talking about sodium bicarbonate. That is indeed baking soda. I did Google it and confirm. But I wanted to ask your thoughts on what the American One and Brandon were talking about with the high pH water versus low pH water afterwards. Is it necessary to come in with that afterwards? Does it provide other benefits? And what do you think about that just in general for IPM?
I don't feel like it's necessary to like sort of like neutralize the pH afterwards, but I don't have a lot of experience with, like, I think we've talked about it before. Some people are recommending like as high as like 11 pH water, like the Kangen water through like electrolysis. And I guess there are people who are saying that it works really well, but I don't have personal experience with it myself. I also want to say that, like, for a lot of pesticides, whether they're biopesticides or chemical pesticides, natural chemistries or non-natural chemistries synthesized, pH can often play a really important role. So you should really pay attention to the label. And when they tell you that a pH is really important, or that it will enhance the efficacy, you should really pay attention to that, because they don't put that on there for no good reason.
Yeah, there's usually a lot of research behind it that gives them justification to put it. Like you said, they're not just putting it on there for fun or to make you have to go through adjusting it.
Yeah, for products that are labeled as for this application. And that's a weird little labeling issue. If you're selling a product designed for a foliar application to adjust the pH, and that's all it does, and it's designed for IPM purpose, then it's going to be considered a pesticide. and you're going to have to do a bunch of testing and label it as a pesticide. So this is the trouble that SM90 got itself into, is they were selling it as a wetting agent, essentially, with a wink and a nod that it could be used as a pesticide in this foliar spray. And since they were sort of marketing it as a pesticide, that's why the stop sale order went through and they had to pull it off the market. So a lot of products that you can use effectively as sort of things to raise pH and have an effective foliar treatment won't talk about it on their label. They won't give you those instructions because they can't. They haven't gone through the labeling process required in order to be sold as a pesticide.
Absolutely salient point to be made. And it's just kind of, that's just how the game is played for a lot of people. Now, I don't advocate for that. But you're right, that does happen. And like, for those who don't know, like you say, I'm just going to reiterate, anything that is sold to affect pests, to kill them, to irritate them, to affect them in some way, you know, those are pesticides. Those are pesticidal agents.
Even organic, even Dr. Zymes, even plant therapy, even anything that kills a pest is a pesticide. That needs to be very clear to all the people in the cannabis community, because it isn't right now. I'll talk to people and they'll say, oh, we didn't spray any pesticides. And then you'll go to make hash and you can smell the plant therapy on their plants. And it's just like,
right. Or the
neem oil. Needs to be disclosure.
Yeah.
Neem oil is so gross.
I agree. I'm not a big fan of how that tastes or smells. I wouldn't recommend it in flower, but
people. The other lesson in this is that not all pesticides are like inherently evil. You know, there's a lot of products that we use that are relatively benign that have an adverse effect on pests, like raising like SM90, to be perfectly honest with you. What it did was raise the pH and it would be effective against pathogens like white powdery mildew. It's basically plant oils. It's not a really dangerous thing, but since it wasn't labeled properly, people now think it's like, oh, that's some dangerous, horrible thing. And that's really our connotations around some of these terms like pesticide. There are certainly bad, noxious, evil pesticides too, don't get me wrong, but just because something is being used as a pesticide doesn't mean it's like a terrible thing to put in your garden.
Yeah, the number of times I've walked into with an area with a client, or I'm talking with them and they say, you know, oh, we don't use any pesticides. And then they have a cabinet full of pesticides that are organic or OMRI listed or whatever. And it's like, actually, that's still a pesticide. And for that matter, too, if you're somebody who thinks on this subject that like organic things that are grown with organic pesticides, like not just cannabis, but also with vegetable crops and other sorts of things, you should be aware that like, there are cases where exceptions are made, where organic crops, like they don't have any other possible way to get rid of a certain pest, and they get emergency approval to use non-organic and sometimes quite noxious pesticides, because it's between that and like total crop failure. So just because you're buying or growing organic, just buying or like you're receiving something that's organic or is labeled that way, doesn't mean that it's not possible that that sort of emergency application didn't happen. Not to break anyone's suspension of disbelief or anything, but it happens a lot.
It's good to include that though, because some people do believe that, okay, because it says organic, it's 100% safe and I don't really have to worry about anything more past that. I think it's great to get to know your farmer, whether it's cannabis or your strawberry. If in times that weren't like this, when you could go to the farmer's market, depending on where you are, you still might be able to, but talk to the person who actually grew it and you can ask them questions like that. Sometimes they'll actually be honest with you. Unfortunately, sometimes they're not, but I think that there's a lot more people moving towards using the less noxious pesticides and moving towards biocontrols and models like that, because even the noxious pesticides, after a certain amount of time, the pests get resistant to them and you have to either change it up or they end up just fighting through it. So there's a lot to consider when it comes to the IPM.
Yeah, sure. I just want to give this shout out on the heels of that, Jack, because it's a great lead in. This is an awesome time to join a CSA, a community supported agriculture, to join a farm to table program. Depending on where you grow or where you live, certainly in California, we have such good options for these things because the climate here is sort of suitable to growing a lot of different things. But a lot of small farms, did the vast majority of their contract work with restaurants. And the restaurants aren't ordering the way they used to. The whole sort of food distribution network has been scrambled by COVID. And a lot of those farms are offering great deals. They've often had these programs in the past where you pay a monthly fee and you go and you pick up like a trunk full of veggies every month or every couple of weeks. So right now, because of COVID, this is like really great programs at really good deals if anybody wants to really get to know their farmers.
Yeah, I definitely want to echo that sentiment for sure. Particularly in California, definitely agricultural mecca that it is. And yeah, like it's important to kind of know where your stuff comes from. And California sets the standard for like other countries in a lot of cases too. So like with like Department of Pesticide Regulation and a bunch of other things like this. So
I almost mentioned that earlier, the CDFA, that level of regulation, like certain pesticide producers will just go to that standard because it's the strictest. So once you get CDFA regulation, you're basically clear for all the other ones, as far as I understand it, at least. Or not to say that you can sell it in other states, yeah. But if you're to that standard, you should be able to go into the other state if you go through paperwork and things like that. Wanted to give the chat a shout out. We have over 100 people with us again this week. I think that's always awesome to see. Make sure you leave a thumbs up to help Shane and the Cheap Home grow and everybody here on the panel so that this video gets out there to more people so they can learn about this information. Whether you're growing your own or getting it from an organic gardener locally, I think that there's definitely room for a lot of people in their life to be more educated about where their food comes from. And I think we can never advocate for that enough.
Absolutely. And also I was just on the Discord channel with Lemon Hoko, for anyone who knows who that is, and we were talking about various things with IPM, and I think some of those people might have jumped into the chat because I told them about the upcoming podcast that we're in right now. So if you are from that Discord channel, you know, leave a comment in the chat, let me know, because I'm just genuinely curious.
I always love seeing the communities crossing. I don't know if Rob, if you see anybody in the thing that I know one of the listeners, Max, Screaming Ruby, who was in here earlier as a GrowCast person. Do you see anybody that you'd like to give a shout out to? We're about that midway point into the show, 1 hour.
Yeah. In. Yeah. There's lots of homegrown helpers, alumni, and GrowPass members in there. I see Smot Poker and Miss Mercine from the Dr. Coco family over there, and they were on the homegrown helpers, and that's kind of why I got a little distracted and hanging out and chatting with people there. So I did kind of want to, before we shift gears off of IPM, talk a little bit about neem oil and my personal experiences with cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome, if that's all right, Jack.
Yeah, well, I would love to hear about it. Brandon actually has some experiences that he could follow up with, perhaps about his friend and their experience, but I'd love to hear yours.
Before you guys jump in, I'm gonna have to get out of here. I hate to sign off early. It's 5 o'clock, it's my go time. I appreciate you guys being here. I wish I could stick around for this, Rob. I'll hopefully catch up with it later, and appreciate the panel as always. Thanks for having me, guys.
Nice seeing you, buddy.
Aaron the Grower on Instagram, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I didn't even say that this entire
ATG
time.
Acres.
ATG Acres.
That's me. Yeah. Bye.
But yeah, you were going to pick up with the CHS and neem.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I just kind of want to make a distinction and share my personal background with that. For anybody that doesn't know, I've been a daily cannabis consumer was 22 years. And over the last couple of years, I'd had like 4 or 5 bouts of unexplained vomiting for 12 to 18 hours. You know, eat the same food as my wife and I would get sick and she would be fine. And then Mother's Day last year, I was sick for 5 straight days, every 30 to 45 minutes, sometimes an hour and a half. And the only thing that would relieve those symptoms was extremely hot showers and increasingly extremely hot showers. You know, like boiling water poured in the bathtub while a shower is, you know, coming down on me. And it's about an elevated body temperature. And I forget the receptors because it's been a long time since I've really dug into the science, but it's not just the CB1 and CB2 receptors, but there's a TPN receptor that reacts with the heat of your body and calms down the gut motility, without getting overly scientific. But so the general scientific assumption is that your cannabinoid receptors are overloaded or burnt out, twisted, something along those lines, and it reacts with this other TP receptor and causes spasms and causes you to throw up. So I, being a longtime cannabis consumer, had a hard time accepting my fate of not being able to consume cannabis, because that's what the doctors tell you immediately. And that's what everybody tells you, because everybody goes back to consuming cannabis and they always get reactions. But my heart, my soul told me that it wasn't cannabis. I mean, we've consumed this plant for 4,000 years. People have smoked hash. I mean, yes, I was consuming a lot of cannabis and a lot of edibles at the time, because I was recovering from hip replacement surgeries in the last 6 months. But I strongly believe that it was what we put on and what we put in the soil to feed our plants. I used advanced nutrients. I never sprayed anything on my plants and flower, first of all. And my IPM regimen was never to really spray anything on the plants, but spray the walls around my rooms, spray the floors leading up to the garage, spray the walls in the garage, et cetera, et cetera. So there is neem oil poisoning, and that's a very clear thing. Like, neem oil is safe to be put on fruits and vegetables and whatever and washes off, but it's not okay to be combusted. And neem oil poisoning will make you throw up, but it is not typically relieved by the hot showers and the elevation of body temperature. Or some people find relief with capsaicin cream, which is cream made from hot peppers. So we at GrowCast, Jordan and I are going to do our first ever shared interview. Are interviewing Dr. Peter Grinspoon, who was just on Percy's Grow Room.
Yep.
Podcast. I forget the name of it. It's anybody know?
They have a few different ones.
The Garage, maybe?
The Grow Room Diaries.
The Grow Room. No, it's Talking Buds or something. No, that's Max's, right?
Talking Buds is Max's. They have
I'll look it up and get back.
They did one with Tommy Chong. That was pretty cool too.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are killing it out there. But it's a UK-based podcast. But so I went 73 days without consuming any cannabis. Oh. no topicals, like completely clean, like, because if it was a receptor thing, I wanted to give myself a fresh start. And I've been back consuming for over a year now, all completely organic cannabis. Shout out to Hoda Herb. He is a good friend and, you know, I can trust his medicine. Shout out to Need East on Instagram, a caregiver up in Maine that took real good care of me.
What do you think it was? The advanced nutrients, or do you think you reset your body after a 73 day break?
Well, I think I reset my body of the stuff that was built up from advanced nutrients, smoking anything and everything that was handed to me, going to a cannabis event every couple of days and smoking a bunch of other people's stuff and not really ever caring what was put on it. And I've always said that's been my biggest concern about the explosion of the home grow industry, is you need to be able to trust what other people are putting on it. And that's why I started the educational part and want to be involved in the educational part is teaching people how to do it right. And that's why I'm sharing this story, is there's a lot to be said to, you know, treating the plants properly and putting good things into the ground and getting good results and not spraying your plants with neem oil or all of these other pesticide sprays if you don't have to, and being very choice with the stuff that you do put on and in your plants, because it does build up and it does have an effect on you.
I want to say shout out to Hoda Herb real quick, because he is occasionally a panel member here on the show. I also wanted to say, Brandon, Russ, you have an experience with a buddy who ended up losing their life to similar experience, right? Because they were taking hot showers and
dehydration, right?
So yeah, so there was a couple of factors involved. First of all, I've been cultivating cannabis for a really long time, and a lot of the information that we now know just simply didn't exist back then. So we used, you know, if we had insect, like an outbreak of something, we would use harsh chemical pesticides. So that's not something I practice these days, as you guys all know. One of the things that was consistently used was the neem oil. And we didn't know what the cause of death of my friend Dave was at the time. It wasn't until years later when I heard about hypermeiosis syndrome.
CHS.
CHS.
Hyperemesis syndrome. Not to be a pedantic.
It's just easier. Most people just CHS.
Pronunciation's not perfect, but you guys know what I'm talking about. So I started hearing about the symptoms, and I was like, this is exactly what was happening. And, you know, my friend, he'd get really sick. And we thought at first it was like Crohn's. And so he went to the doctor to try to figure out what was wrong with his intestines. And they did all these testings, and it would always come back negative. And, you know, he'd have like bits of like where he was like, you know, he used to go to prison a lot. So whenever he went into prison, he wasn't smoking, he was super healthy. He'd get out, he'd be super healthy. And then after a while of him, you know, smoking and stuff, he'd start getting sick. And it was like these terrible, terrible stomach cramps. He'd throw up. And one of the things was that was unique to this was the hot showers, because the showers would be so hot that he would be, you know, getting second, third degree burns on his back. And he would literally just be curled up in fetal position in the shower. Like, I mean, just being there and going through the amount of pain and angst and just like how you have no control, you can't do anything for your friend, you know, like it's insane, dude, because there's nothing you can do. And he's sitting there like hurting himself physically.
Well, I'll say this, you should stay hydrated, because they're vomiting and they're showering. So the combination, you dehydrate yourself. And when you dehydrate yourself, you get renal or kidney failure, and you can die from that. So the hot showers relieve the symptoms, but you need to stay hydrated, not just water, electrolytes like Pedialyte, Gatorade, something that is more salts and sugars and all the stuff you're losing.
Couldn't eat, and then he would be like, oh, I need chicken broth, which is super high in sodium. And then so he'd be dehydrating himself more. You know, so it was a combination.
You need sodium and potassium for cramping. If you need it, like I went through a lot of that as an athlete, as a young man, it fucked me up really bad for a long time, but you need that right levels of sodium and potassium. If you have too much of one or the other, you'll get cramps. I want to give Noah the Grower a second to just jump in and, say hello and introduce himself, because he got here a little bit late. That was my fault, because I didn't send him the numbers. So Noah, I see you over there at the hand up. Do you want to jump in and say hello, and then I'll go back to Brandon.
Yeah. How's it going, everybody? I'm Nolan Aguero from Instagram with 2 E's, and yeah, I had a hard time getting in, but I'm here. And how's everyone doing?
We're doing well, man. We're happy that you finally made it. That was totally my fault. I apologize again for not sending those numbers over earlier. We had technical difficulties on top of everything else earlier, and I was missing the messages in the DM, so sorry about that. But Brandon, you were finishing up about the story with your buddy. Yeah. And how he...
So at the time, nobody had heard of CHS, and it wasn't until I had heard about it and I was like, oh my God, this is what this was. And it was a factor, because we were spraying neem oil on plants as pest management practice. That was a regular thing. And, you know, my friend ended up passing away, and, you know, and I, it was like tragic because there was nobody knew what it was, and there was no diagnosis, and it wasn't in the, and the solution would have been so simple. You know what I mean? And it really, really sucks.
It's a cautionary tale for sure, because we don't want more people to go through that same experience, and the education being spread is really important. And Rob, I wanted to give you a chance again to hop in there. It looked like you had something to say.
Yeah, I mean, sorry for your loss, Brandon. That's a tough situation, not knowing how to be able to help somebody. You know, I am grateful that there, you know, were people before me and a lot of people that tried to help me. You know, shout out to Dr. Uma. I'm not going to, you know, try and butcher her last name, but she's an amazing woman. You know, there's Dr. Dustin Sulak from Maine, you know, have put in time and effort trying to research this stuff. And like I said, we're going to be interviewing Dr. Grinspoon here in a couple of weeks, and very much looking forward to having another conversation with a doctor now that I'm, you know, a year into consuming clean organic cannabis. And, you know, I just urge people to, again, think about the stuff that you're putting on and in your plants. And, you know, I always say on my podcast that, you know, this plant gives you, you know, everything that you put into it, you know, it's going to return it to you. So, you know, put positivity and good stuff into it, because it's going to return that, you know, in big, beautiful, you know, plentiful buds. You know, don't go into your grow room with a bad attitude and, you know, having a chip on your shoulder, and, you know, clear your head and get in there with a good attitude and treat your ladies well, and they'll treat you well.
Totally agree. And I want to say shout out to the Grinspoon family, because Lester Grinspoon, Peter Grinspoon's father, recently passed away. So rest in peace. He's a legend in my eyes. He was one of the first Harvard professors, very vocally open and advocating cannabis. His grandson, I believe, had cancer, and it was one of the only things that helped him after chemotherapy. And he has a great story. Anybody wants to look into Dr. Lester Grinspoon, there's even a strain named after him from Barney's Farm. I'm not a huge fan of Barney's Farm in general, but it's kind of cool that they represented Dr. Lester Grinspoon in a really strange strain. It yields like these peas on like a branch almost. It's like the most larfy looking plant you'd ever seen, and like a long sativa, but it's kind of a amazing plant if you think about
it. Yeah,
it's
so definitely distinct. its own phenotype, that's for sure.
I love that stuff. The freak show too, and the duck's foot, and all the different little cannabis mutations. It's all fascinating to me.
That's funny. Yeah, the Grinspoon family's done some amazing things in cannabis, and you know, here in the Northeast, and that's, you know, where I'm focused, and the Boston Freedom Rally, and all the things that they've done for the community have been amazing.
Make sure to follow Peter on Twitter. I follow him there, and he's probably one of like the best doctors I've ever followed on Twitter.
Hands down.
He shares amazing content, like up to date, current medical studies, both good and bad. I know a lot of people don't want to hear about that, but sometimes cannabis studies aren't positive. Sometimes people get anxiety attacks and shit like that, and it doesn't work out. So you got to figure out the dosing. You got to figure out how to get over CHS and things like that. So I'm a big advocate
strain
for getting legit doctors into the field like him.
I bet you're strain specific too, you know. I think cannabis is for everyone personally. I mean, if taking RSO will stop a cancer tumor, then taking RSO before you get a cancer tumor would probably stop it from ever happening. I think everyone should be on the RSO kick right when they become an adult for the rest of their life.
My daily, every morning, every afternoon, I take some. That's what I was just talking about at the beginning of the show. I'm making my own right now. Lady Greenstock came over here with a big spoonful of it and had me take a little lick off that. But yeah, it's great stuff. I think it's good medicine. I think there's a word, like apoptosis is when it actually kills a cancer cell. But then there's another one where it prevents cancer from being formed. I can't remember the actual technical term for it. But I think both CBD and THC have shown benefit for different types of cancer. Because when you hear cancer, a lot of people think it's just one thing. There's like 30 or 40 or 50 different types of cancer, and they're all sort of different diseases if you look into it deeply.
I have two things to say. One is that, speaking of that, about research and cannabis not necessarily being a panacea in all cases or all derivatives of cannabis, right? Warfarin interacts with cannabidiol, CBD. or rather, I should say the latter interacts with the former, and it's a blood thinner. And the problem with that's a huge problem for people who are like who have blood thinning issues, whether it's from disease or it's because they're older or some sort of thing. You should be very careful because it can make your warfarin dosage much more potent than normal. And that can cause a lot of problems. Like if you recently had heart surgery, for example, or some other sort of gastrointestinal surgery, or who knows, or if you're treating hemorrhoids, like all kinds of things where you're bleeding, anytime you're bleeding, if you're in sports, who knows.
Noah, you've got your hand up over there. I think I have an idea of what you wanted to say. Go ahead and jump in.
Yeah, I was just going to comment off of what Sink Angel was saying there. I've had open heart surgery. I have a mechanical aortic titanium valve in my heart. And because of that, I'm required to take warfarin every single day. So I can attest to what he's saying is correct. So I live that every day, warfarin every day, no matter what, because that metal valve prevents me from strokes. So, yeah.
Did the doctor warn you of the CBD interaction? Or did
No. He didn't warn me. Wow. Most won't.
They don't know. They don't know.
They didn't even really, like, I don't know. That's a long story. They kind of, like, really wanted me to take the heart surgery. You know, there was another alternative. Like, I could have got a pig valve or, like, just like a minor thing up my groin, like, through, like, and put in there without having open heart. But the open heart surgeon recommended me have an open heart surgery, so...
It's less often that you have to go in after like 5 years. Where the stent, you have to usually go in to get them replaced every 5 or 10 years. The open heart, you can go like 20 or 30 years and they can actually clean you up real good when they do it. My father actually just had that done. So
that's why they did tell me to do that. He did say that with the other way that it would have to happen again, and that this would, you know, could last me, you know, I'm 40, so it could last me most of my life. So.
I want to say this though, this is a time for us to be champions of the cannabis plant and good educators, because there is something called patient doctor education, where patients ask their doctor about a certain medication, or patients say, hey, I heard this, or even print out studies and data and say, hey, did you know that CBD actually is impacted, the warfarin in my blood? So if I'm going to take CBD, and anybody else that you work with who you recommend this drug to, I just want to give you that heads up, because it'll affect their dosing. And then they can look into it. They can find the actual data. And they'll be like, holy shit, this guy was actually right. And then they'll start telling their other patients, hey, if you're going to take CBD, even if you're not going to tell me about it, I need to know, because that's going to impact the warfarin dose that you're getting. So have open and honest conversations with your doctor about that kind of stuff.
You have to think about this too, Jack. You know, if we have a drug that is interacting, there's probably a good chance that there's a ton of other drug interactions with other cannabinoids and maybe
THC. I know that from my own experience. You smoke too much THC, you take a little CBD, it brings you down. At least in my experience, if you smoke CBD, it ruins your THC high. It completely takes you out of that like zippy paranoia, like uplifted kind of anxiety state. And I think that shows me that CBD and probably THC have lots of drug interactions across all the different pharmaceuticals and things like that. So it needs to be more well studied.
For those who are,
science comes out to see, you know, if I'm kind of thinking is if cannabis might also kind of drive natural medicine, maybe the combination of both more holistic and traditional medicine, mixed with what, you know, modern science. I wonder if it'll do that. I wonder if they'll start, developing programs where it's not just chemical interactions that they're looking at, but things as a system whole, like we do.
My doctors in California won't write pain prescriptions. They'd rather you say, hey, I'm taking cannabis or I'm taking CBD because it's legal here. Go ahead, Matthew.
Oh, sorry. I wanted to say that the two things that, so I already mentioned the thing about warfarin and CBD. Cannabidiol interacts with the P450 cytochrome. So a lot of things do interact with that because it's part of the sort of metabolism process for a lot of different compounds. So that's just one thing to keep in mind. That might be one way that people can sort of research and see if a compound is going to be effective in that way or have that sort of interaction.
I just want to say many doctors were never educated about the endocannabinoid system in their formal education. Just like we're finding out all this stuff about endocrine disorders and issues like that that are finally being researched and getting new medication and lots of studies and therapies are being dedicated to them when they didn't know about the endocrine system for a while. They discover it and then there's a bunch of new discoveries. We know about the endocannabinoid system. It's just taking a little bit of a long time because of the illegalities to get into mainstream research so that it can be given to doctors, because a lot of them abide by the Hippocratic Oath, where they believe it's wrong to give out a medication if there hasn't been some sort of FDA-backed study to say that it's safe. So even though cannabis, anecdotally across the board for thousands of years, people have used it with fairly safe experiences, they want to have double-blind placebo trials to prove that it is as safe as we believe it is and that it can treat some of the ailments that we believe it to treat. And I'm looking cannabis, forward to that.
And in a lot of cases, cannabis is anti-inflammatory, and people mostly think, well, that's good, right? That'll bring down some redness and some swelling. And sure, yeah, definitely. But understand that that is the same as saying cannabis suppresses your immune system. And that's also kind of a vague thing. A lot of things can suppress your immune system at various degrees in various ways. So that's just another thing, is that like people will take this medicinally and have a certain effect that they expect, and they associate that with a positive thing, but it's not necessarily positive in the complex, multifaceted nature of your physiology.
It's really interesting with like ARDS-003 and COVID. They had like 150, there was a research couple who looked at 150 different tinctures, and like 50 of them were CBD. And one of those CBD tinctures ended up helping ARDS, or acute respiratory distress syndrome, which is commonly associated with cytokine storm with coronavirus, but also like other infections like staph. So it's been being looked at right now as a treatment for COVID and other respiratory illnesses. So it's cool that we have access to even stuff as simple as just THC. I found a study where THC saved 100% of the lives of lab rats that had ARDS. So, and that's just plain old THC, not some specific tincture that was selected out of 150 that were trialed.
I also just wanted to mention quickly that I had been diagnosed with cannabis hyperemesis syndrome as well. And it just went away eventually. And I don't really know what or why or how. I couldn't actually link my situation, although I have no doubt that this is one. So CHS is a syndrome. So that means that's a collection of symptoms. I mean, at least I think that's a good simplified definition.
So, right. There's not a blood test for it.
Yeah. Right. Like a lot of different, and this is true in IPM, a lot of things can cause lesions. A lot of different things can cause chlorosis of the leaves. Senescence, a natural process in plants, can cause senescence, right? Like, so you really got to identify the agent. But with me, I couldn't really sort of correlate with a very particular thing like some other people. Like, well, I started just growing my own, and I knew what I used, and I never had the problem. So I think it's totally one vector for the syndrome. For me, I think it was because I think that too many times a big part of it was like using too much at a time. And I think over time that became a little much for my neurobiology. And I think when I got enough of a tolerance, I think that sort of problem, because I had the same issue with the showers and the heat, and that being kind of the only solace I could take when I was in one of those hyperemetic vomiting circumstances.
It's definitely a scary situation to be in for anybody who is going through it. One of the things I hear first recommended is actually stopping use, like Rob mentioned, but that's really hard for a lot of people. And staying really hydrated with things that are more than water, I just can't advocate that enough. Either Pedialyte, Gatorade, some sort of rehydrant that's not just H2O, because you're losing a lot of electrolytes.
So for anybody that's experiencing this out there, I will share exactly what worked for me. I would take an extremely, whatever I could stand, hot shower for as long as the hot water would last. And, you know, I would actually be in a bath of hot water with the shower beating down on me, boiling water poured in, to whatever I could stand. I don't want to advocate getting to the point where you are burning yourself like Brandon's friend. But when I got out, you know, I barely even dried off. I would throw on like 3 layers of clothes and then bury myself underneath 3 or 4 blankets. And I would keep my body temperature up for as long as I could. And the entire time that I was not having a convulsion, I was sipping water and hydrating. I was never dehydrated because I was, while I was in the shower or while I was in the bath, I was sipping water. I was sipping Gatorade, Pedialyte ice pop, freeze pops. Thank goodness I had a 2-year-old at that, or a 3-year-old at this point in time, you know? And then I can't say enough about getting underneath a blanket and keeping your body temperature up, because it's not just the hot water, but hot water and bath is going to keep your body temp, or get your body temperature up the quickest and keep it there. But if you can keep your body temperature up for longer, you know, I would have a heating pad, you know, an electric heating pad on my back and like, you know, rice packs around me, whatever I could do to get another hour. And then I would just sip water and sip Gatorade and rehydrate. And, you know, if you're experiencing that, please, please reach out to me. I'll do whatever I can to help you. I'm currently working with somebody in Pennsylvania, getting her a contact for organic medicine, because I've had success with people switching over to organic medicine. And if you can, I know that's hard in a lot of legal states, but that's the first thing that I would go to, is organic, clean medicine, never been sprayed with anything, as clean as you can get it.
I also want to say, with what you're talking about with blankets, that's a great tip. One, because you're much less likely to cause injury to yourself with overly hot water, because the temptation is probably there. I can imagine if I was sick and the only thing that relieved it is hot water, I'd want the hottest water possible. And if you have a hot enough source, you might end up getting hot. So the blanket thing is a really good idea. When I was a lifeguard, for people that would be in shock, they had these Mylar blankets that I've actually seen people use for their grow rooms, because it's really reflective, but that material holds heat extremely well. So if you don't have a fancy blanket or heavy blanket, you can put that over your skin, and then a regular blanket, just like a, you know, whatever you've got on top of that, to trap as much heat and moisture and all that stuff in, to keep your body temp up high, because I've seen it actually help people who are in shock get their body temperature elevated enough so that you could basically resuscitate them. And it's fascinating that really thin little tiny little sheet can actually keep a ton of heat on somebody's body. So they're really cheap too.
The hot shower is kind of like a progression. Like your first time, it's like, oh, it's a normal shower, and then you progressively have to keep getting it hotter and hotter. And you know, if you're experiencing this, and hot showers are the relief, like I think the first thing you have to do is really go for a longer break and clean out your system. There are other things that you can do to help clean out your CB1 and CB2 receptors. You know, exercise. You know, depression is something that is linked to, you know, kind of, you know, keeping these receptors in an imbalance. You know, people say mangoes, turkey, almonds are other foods that kind of are going to help scrub those receptors. Exercise. Other things that I can't think of.
I gotta agree with exercise. I got a drug test 14 days after I got busted when I was in high school as a kid, 16, and I was in like 2-a-days for football and also doing like open gym for basketball. And I was just sweating every single day, 14 days after I'd been smoking every single day for months and months and months, like tons and tons of cannabis. My brother was supplying, dealing it, so I got it for free and smoked a bunch of it all the time. But I passed a piss test 14 days after getting arrested and having a bunch of it on me and in my system. So exercise can definitely make it work through your system quicker. And I think it hangs onto fat cells too. So it's like a double whammy. Yep. If you're losing fat, totally, you're burning it out of the fat and getting it out of your system quicker.
Totally agreed.
Sorry for the dead air there. I know the, actually Dr. MJ, you've been off quiet over there. Have you ever had any experiences with CHS yourself personally? And, what are your thoughts?
No, fortunately I have not. You know, well, first of all, I mean, my thoughts are profound sympathy for anybody that's dealing with this. I don't have any personal experience. It sounds awful. I think this is why they put scald guards on our sort of shower faucets. And I was thinking about what Rob said, until he runs out of water. I'm on our whole building has a central boiler, so I could probably be in there like 24 hours a day. And yeah, I hope that doesn't happen. I do wonder, and you know, I don't have much to sort of go on this, but I wonder about what was really provoking it. I think it's wonderful that switching supplies has seemed to relieve the problem, but I certainly think we would need to know more about what it was. I'm kind of curious, Rob, what were you using from AN? Were you using all of their sort of wild and out there supplements, or were you just using their base nutrients?
I was using the pH balanced lineup A and B, both veg and bloom, and then the bud blood, bud candy, kind of the middle tier. And
you
then
weren't using things like Wet Betty and stuff like that, though. Those are all, they all do different things. I don't recommend advanced nutrients in general.
I don't either.
Well, and I would always do a 10-day flush.
So, like that. So
anybody that wants to think that, like, I'd always do a 10-day flush and flush out my plants. Maybe not enough, you know.
I don't think it has anything to do with the flush.
Their expense is what bothers me about AN. The number of bottles, and if you look at compared to like Jack's Nutrients, which works just fine, or even General Hydro, which has like a three-part, which also works very well, and it's been proven for decades.
Right.
There is stuff that just costs so much less that you can get the same, even better, actually.
I agree. No, it's all marketing strategy with not like inferior quality products. It's an inferior quality product with a huge marketing budget, really designed towards sort of the bro crowd with like scantily clad models is their main method to sell nutrients. And I'd rather buy my nutrients from a company that wanted to stand behind sort of the science of their nutrients as opposed to somebody in a bikini. But that's just something to think about if you're tempted by those labels to buy them.
Labels are so cool though.
Yeah, that's they're masking
they very pretty your
quality product.
When I was not even just when I was in China, but in other places too. Like it's so funny to see packaging, because like a big part of like over there, like a lot of packages for things were literally, they're meant to be like opened and be like a whole experience, which in and of itself doesn't have to be bad or malicious or wrong or right. But it was definitely interesting to see so many things that like obviously this is something you're supposed to buy for your boss, like as like a congratulatory thing, or somebody else you know, or an acquaintance or something. And it was like, but things were like ludicrously expensive for what you were getting, almost assuredly because of the packaging that went into it, which is unique thing, but
it's a classic marketing strategy. Yeah. I mean, there are different ways to sort of position markets in the market, or just position products in the market. And one way is to sort of, you know, heavily market inferior products at a high price. And the high price adds the luxury sort of feel to it, Matt. And that's the other thing. There are some products that we feel are just more valuable because they cost more money.
I feel like brand name in general, even for things that are really good and things that are middling and things that are kind of low ball, it seems like more and more kind of like creating that parasocial like enjoyment of something, or like association with something that like it's part of your identity, or it really taps into like somebody's right. You know what I mean? Like,
yes. And they're more like that. AN is more a lifestyle brand than I think any other nutrient company out there. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. I just feel as though, I mean, obviously, like you say, it's a classic strategy. It's not anything new. But I think in general, like people try to do on some level, this sort of like, hey, this is a thing. I'm not very articulate, but
Great plants with it. I will say that it is expensive, but my one buddy, like Dave in Ohio, he grew with it for years before he finally switched after going to a bunch of trade shows and trying like every sample from every different company, and you run out eventually and then you have to buy into one of their systems. But yeah, I think that there are people out there that have tons of success. So I'm not trying to like completely shit on Advance for who uses it. We're not trying to like hurt your feelings or put you down. It's a successful product and a lot of growth stores pushed it, so you probably got, literally, you go to a store where they're talking about growing, even if they can't say that they're growing cannabis. And your trusted source is this person who's probably been doing it a lot longer than you. And they say, hey, buy this bottle.
Right. They definitely do commission sales through hydro stores. Absolutely. 100%. So those people that you go to for advice in your hydro store, just be aware that the manufacturers give them rebates based on what they push that month. They also give them sales incentives and targets. And if they hit those, they get bonuses. So think about who's giving you some of your advice with
wise words.
I like to say find the product that you enjoy the most and then try and figure out who grew it and how they grew it and then try and replicate that if you can. That's a decent starting place. And then once like people that. Get a system underneath their feet, they can sort of adjust it and dial it in to see, oh, I like less of that or more of that, or actually I'm going to go to this different medium that works better for me in my setup. But I think there's so many different ways to do it successfully. A lot of people get caught up on trying to find the one best way. And I think it's the best way for you, what you like the most, what is affordable, what's locally available and clean. I think there's a lot of considerations that go into everybody's garden. That's why they all look so different. That's why I love following so many different people.
At the end of the day, if you know and understand why it works and how it works, like that's the ultimate kernel right there. And then you can go into, like you said, Jack, replicating it, finding somebody else who does the same thing or maybe something you or they might consider to be better for whatever reason. It's why on my going to IPM, it's why my Pest Primer videos talk a lot about like the actual freaking physiology of the bug and why does that matter. Like a lot of times maybe that's a little bit much sometimes when you're just looking for a solution, but I think it's so important to know why the solution works so you're not sort of susceptible to some of the inculcations that people make, like, oh, this will work fine. Like, or my favorite bugaboo right now is the insect digestion thing. Like,
you can have carryover effects with your good advice in one of those pest primers. You're like, well, if these larger pests are blocked out by insect screens, and then that insect screen blocks another pest, it's like you get the double benefit from learning about, oh, size of a pest actually matters. And there's actually physical ways to go about it that you don't have to spray anything. And those things that I learn in your videos, I really appreciate and enjoy you sharing that might be like minute or overly specific to some people. But I think it really, that education ends up translating into your grow.
I've had a lot of people say, not to toot my own horn too much, but I've had many people recently, the last year or two especially, more say that like because I was detailed in that way or because I said things in the way that I did and sort of enthusiastically, they're like, I actually want to be an entomologist now, or oh, I actually want to like look into this more or study it in college or do something. Yep. It's really a surreal and gratifying and fulfilling feeling. So
I agree with that. Yeah, learning is contagious. Once you really start to understand things, you want to be able to understand more. And I really appreciate that approach. I try to do the same thing with my articles, Matt, in giving users sort of the understanding underneath why what we're doing works and sort of what is the science behind this, not just like do this now and trust me.
Yeah, right. And I really appreciate that. And that's why I really like your, to be honest, my favorite thing that you've done is the light calculator and the explanations of PPFD, because it's just like the wattage sort of, the reasons why wattage doesn't work makes sense to me kind of intuitively, but like some people, like it's photon, like you have to understand the science of what's going on, and you don't have to understand in great detail, but like just know that like light is the thing that feeds the plant with the CO2, and there's a little combination thing and deconstruction that happens, and there you go. Like they pull their carbon out of the air, not out of the ground, even though we like to think of nutrients as plant food. Those little things that we get caught or told in like kindergarten or first grade really do have profound sort of misinformation effects.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks, Matt. I really appreciate that. So yeah, I think once you have the knowledge, once you can start to see how things like that work, and I think that the way light works is a good example. That's what I like to do with it sort of in every video I make, is sort of give a little insight into these things, because then you can apply that knowledge to other situations and you sort of understand the relationships that are going on, so you can extrapolate what might happen in your grow space, you know, in a similar situation or even in a different situation, once you understand those relationships.
I think the whole like, cause I said so explanation, if you ever get somebody who's like that, they really probably don't understand what is going on. So if somebody can't explain it to you, maybe they don't understand. And I think if they did, they'd be able to give you the reason behind it. And that's why I always like to have an explanation or a link or a source or whatever to back up whatever I'm saying. I think it's a good course to kind of have proof behind your statements, or at least knowledge and understanding of why you say or do something.
Yeah, or at least a theory. I mean, sometimes I find that we don't really know. There are certain things about, I don't know, like extending darkness before harvest or even the final flush and things like that. There is some stuff that we know. There's other sort of known unknowns, right? And then
motivate Iraq, please.
but then we have a bunch of stuff where we sort of know other things about how plants work, and we can develop a theory. So if you have, you know, at least a theory, then explain that, and then we can later on decide, okay, that theory is whack, or okay, I think that may be true, and the extrapolations from that are also valid.
Or maybe you were partially right about one thing or another, right?
Right. So to be,
that's often the case.
To be aware of that, and I think this gets to be somewhat, a deeper level of awareness about our own beliefs and thoughts and understandings than oftentimes we're consciously aware of. But to sort of understand where your own thoughts come from and how many of them are really based on sort of like rigorous science, or how many of them are based on, you know, something you heard as a child and that's probably not true at all. Our sort of conceptual universes have been filled in by a lot of different sources. And that's been an interesting exercise in almost every article I write in trying to identify sort of the source of my own knowledge on these things.
Brandon, you want to jump in there?
Oh yeah, no, I totally understand what he's saying. It's funny because there's a list of wizards rules, and the wizard's first rule explains that, you know, people's heads are full of knowledge, most of which is not correct, and oftentimes it's, you know, easier because of that to people get led astray into ideas and beliefs that don't necessarily have any factual basis in the science.
I guess, you know, the Pluto's cave analogy is pretty much always relevant in that way, right? Like, you know, you're seeing the effects or the illusions of something rather than the actual like causal agents. And oftentimes I think the causal agents are not just one, but a group of various things that you're talking about. But then we're talking about epistemology. So
science is always learning new stuff.
I changed
too.
Up my home, bro. Completely, just recently.
Why and what'd you do?
Okay, so you guys remember? Here, I'll just go out there.
You had the two tent set up. You had the 5x5, and then the little basically lung room, which was an air conditioning unit that was pumping the cold air into the tent that's in your garage, I believe.
Right. I had a 5x5, and then I had a little 2x2. That had an AC in it. What I did is I had this 8x8 tent sitting in my garage from a previous thing from somebody else. And so I was like, you know what? I'm gonna kind of rearrange this and make it a little more like what I want. So hold on 1 second, it's gonna get dark. Let me turn the light on. Okay, so what I ended up doing was I put the 5x5 tent. Well, let me see if you guys can see this. I put the 5x5 tent
inside
the 8x8, and then I have the little small 2x2 by like it's a 24x24x36. So
two
I have
two
like
by three.
Insulation tent that I can do, like, you know, if I want to take my male and hit a female, and then I can, you know, let them do their thing in there, or I can use it for clones or whatever, and then I have more space over on this side. If I want to put like, you know, some veg plants or whatever, and then I have, you know, my regular little 5x5 space here. And then I have everything down here that I need, like my little humidifier, my AC, my CO2, and then my little box that controls everything.
And it's actually looking nice. A lot happier over there. than it was a few weeks ago, or last week when we looked, at least.
Things are looking nice looking greener. Space, Brandon.
It's all right. It's a part of a little project that I'm working on with the Blueberry Trainwreck MK Ultra.
So it's got to be crazy to be in such a small garden after being in a giant ass facility full of like thousands of plants and like 40 light rooms, just going from one of those to a tent.
It's funny because I'm like obsessed, man. I'm like, I wake up and I come down here and check on all of these and I go to work. And then a lot of times I'll come home and like start chucking up seed or doing bokashi stuff, or I just I'm always around weed constantly.
I think that's what we call living the dream, right? At least I enjoy that. That's a good lifestyle. Kyle, how are things going as far as shucking seeds for you over there in Mass? I know you've got some new stuff coming on the way.
Yeah, I'm actually planning on harvesting, I think, in about a week and a half to 2 weeks. I have a lot of really good pinos that came out. I'm like super pumped. Some of them smell like grape fun dip and candy cigarettes, and I got like some other stuff going on. But next round will be seeds. I basically did like a pure flower run and pheno hunt, and then I'm just going to take those phenos and make seeds. I might sell some. I might cross some of the phenos were so in the same genome or the same cross were so beautiful. I might cross them together and just see how those turn out. But yeah, so to comment on something that you guys were talking about before about the science thing, man. And I posted this a while ago to you guys. I don't know if you recall, but there's a guy named Hawk who's like a really in-depth medical cannabis breeder down in
Oregon.
Yeah. And he had prostate cancer, and they kept telling him that he needs to go, you know, through the obvious chemo and stuff like that. Well, he didn't want to take that route, and he was actually getting suppository, if I'm saying that correctly. I think it was Black Dominia. Black Domina. And it went away, and then it came back, and then he did it again, and it went away. And I think after the third session doing that suppository, he has been cancer free for like 15 years now. So, and my grandfather just passed away from prostate cancer, and I wish we would have tried that route before doing what he went through, the basic, whatever the doctors told him to do. But I firmly believe, man, that there's, you know, hopefully there's good things to come in the future. And, it's definitely, there's definitely a purpose for it.
Direct contact, I'll say, like Rick Simpson, he got famous for Rick Simpson oil. Like I talked about at the beginning of the show, he used cannabis oil because he read a study about how THC killed cancer in mice. And he used high THC cannabis oil on his cancer, on his skin, on his face. He had some there on his nose, had some on his arm and a few other spots. Well, he said he got the one surgically removed. It came back. So then the other two spots, he just started putting cannabis oil underneath his bandages. And within weeks or even like a few days in some cases, those spots ended up going away. And he said he tried to share that information. And this was back when with the doctors in Canada, and they didn't want to believe anything he had to say because cannabis legality wasn't where it is now. So I think that it's promising that there's more research, but I do think there's something like you were just saying with Hawk about the on contact, like specific, if you have the ability to get it directly on there. Like if you have brain cancer, obviously you're not going to be able to like open up your skull and rub it on your brain, but taking RSO,
I could do that for you.
Tao has the surgical skills and steady hand.
I got a skill saw, no worries.
It's like that
you could all use a good brain massage from time to time.
But I will say, Rick Simpson himself, he's still alive today in 2020. He does interviews on YouTube. He's fucking badass. Shout out to Rick. He said he likes 4 to 5 strain indica blends. And I don't know why. A lot of people consider those the most medicinal, even when they're smoked. So I think blending 4 or 5 of them, you're going to hit a lot of the endocannabinoid system and potentially have the most overall impact of entourage effects and things like that. So that's what Rick Simpson recommends. He also recommends using naphtha, but he's in Canada where it's 99.99% pure. It's like isopropyl or really high proof alcohol here in the States. We can't get clean naphtha down here, at least to my knowledge. Most places that get it, it's contaminated. So a lot of people don't like to use naphtha, and they even stopped calling RSO RSO because they started using alcohol instead of naphtha. But Rick put a lot of people onto it, even though he wasn't the first person to do it. And he also, to his claim, has helped thousands of people with cancer, and they're still alive through using cannabis oil. So I definitely think there's more than just a little bit of an anecdote. There's a website called cureyourowncancer.org where people have posted their x-rays and scans where they have cancer, stage 3, stage 4. We're told you only have 3 months to live, 2 months to live, get your things in order. And here they are living 3, 5, 10 years later in some cases. So never give up. A lot of it is being optimistic and believing, but getting good, clean quality medicine, if you can, is a really a major thing for people going through those difficult diseases like cancer and others. But we're coming up to the final 10 minutes. I wanted to say thank you again to Rob. I know you didn't get to talk very much. This is just sort of like a normal panel. You're just like one of the growers here with us. You like helping other growers, so it makes sense. You blended right in.
Yeah, man, you don't have to apologize for anything. When I was keeping myself busy chatting in the chat, which is an awful lot of fun, and getting those guys to, you know, like the video if they haven't already gotten the message. You know, spread the love, man. Spread the love. That's what it's about.
For sure.
Yeah, shout out to 121 people watching now. I don't know if that's the new record or if we had that before, but I've been seeing us going way over the, you know, a little bit over the triple digits into the triple double digits there. And I'm just really happy to see that. I really appreciate everyone who comes on, and especially the names that I see week to week.
It's cool. There's actually like 500 to 600 that watch throughout the show. Some of them probably have to go and do other things throughout their day at this time, and they can't watch the whole thing. But concurrently, we've got the 118 or 122 or whatever that number was just at. But we get hundreds more than that that actually tuned in during the show live. So it's an awesome community. We really appreciate all of you who are here live. We appreciate anyone who comes afterward. You can like the show. You can subscribe to the show, and it helps support the channel. I want to give Noah the Groa a chance to go ahead and give his social media and his final information and shout outs.
Yeah, I'm Noah the Grower on Instagram. Anybody who has any questions about what I'm doing or any questions about growing, you're more than welcome to stop by my page. You can direct message me any question. I try and help everybody as much as I can. And yeah, I've been medically growing for a while, and I enjoy it. Happy to be here, and everybody have a good day and happy growing.
Happy growing to you, Noah. Sorry I got those numbers to you late. You do a hell of a job. I love looking at your plants on Instagram. They look beautiful. So I just want to say shout out to you. You're doing a great thing, and the plants that you grow are probably helping not just yourself, but other people around. So that's a really awesome thing. The
Thanks
American
a lot,
one, you are up next, buddy.
Jack and panel, was interesting discussions this week. It's always great to be here. Chat, glad to be to see you guys. Yeah, I apologize if you don't know me already. You've been missing out. I'm the American one on IG, I mean on YouTube, and I'm the American one underscore with underscore Akeens on IG. Just search for the American one, and I'm the little guy with the American top hat. So yeah, thanks for showing up tonight, everyone.
And thank you, yeah, definitely for showing up. We had some technical difficulties at the beginning of the show, so we didn't go live at the regular time. Happy you all found us still, and were able to tune in this week. Next up, Kyle Breeder.
Hey, thanks for having me, everybody. Rob, thanks for being here. If you're open for it, I mean, I'd be up to doing a podcast with you or a show or something. But yeah, if anybody wants to get any feminized seeds, feel free to check out my website at pbreeding.com. If you want to look at some of the new stuff that I'm growing or getting into, predicated breeding on all social media. Again, Jack, thanks for always hosting and keeping the show alive, and I hope everyone has a great week. I'll see you guys next Sunday.
Thank you for joining us, Kyle. I've seen a lot of people within this very community, the Cheap Home Grow listeners, growing the predicative breeding genetics. I appreciate the work that you've put in to stress testing them and trying to weed out any of the weak so that, like Rob mentioned earlier, you have plants that are hardy and resistant. So even in a home grow environment, if it's not perfect all the time, the plant can still produce and produce medicine that makes the grower very happy. I've talked to literally more people than I can count on one hand in DMs that have grown your gear and been really happy with it. So shout out to you. You're doing good work that people are appreciating, and that's awesome stuff. Somebody who has grown some on the panel right here with us tonight is Dr. MJ. So I'll give you the chance to do your send outs.
Hey, yeah, it was a fun show. I you know, Rob, I really enjoyed getting to know you. I mean, I think we got to see quite a bit into your experience and certainly to get a sense of your empathy and your suffering and sort of that struggle was eye-opening and I think helpful to a lot of people out there. So that was fun. Thanks for coming on. And yeah, shout out, you know, I'd like to give my shout out to the Cocoa for Cannabis community, especially the Plant Training Grow Challenge. We have over 260 growers participating in the Plant Training Grow Challenge. And this is the flip week, flipping on the first, and we're giving away the PhotonTech X465W Pro Grow Light on October 1st. So if you're in the PTGC, be sure you're paying attention to that. And if you want to get involved in these grow challenges, we're going to start signups for the New Year's Grow Challenge, which starts on January 1st. On October 1st, you'll be able to start signing up for that as well. I got a few grow light tests coming out. People ask me about those. I got the Viper Spectra XS1500, the New Mars FC3000, and the MyGrow Array. And I also got the Grower's Choice ROI E720 and the Grower's Choice ROI E420. All stacked up in my hallway. I've tested about half of them and all those reports. I'm going to try to do one a week for the next several weeks. So look forward to that. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Rob, again. And talk to you guys next week.
That is a lot of lights to test. I know that it's actually a lot of good quality lights because I've seen their numbers from other places, but I look forward to seeing your videos because I think you do a great job of displaying how they present the light to the canopy and all the numbers. Like Thanks. Matthew mentioned earlier, I think you do a great job with that. And I'm also going to be joining that plant training grow challenge on October 1st. That'll be my birthday. That's this Thursday. I've got three berry lights that I've been doing a bunch of low stress training on. I've documented with photos that I need to go and upload at cocoforcannabis.com. Really awesome community over there. Eagle Gardens mentioned how much he liked it when he stopped in over there and that he's going to be joining into the grow challenge as well. So I encourage many listeners in the chat, if you have the ability to, definitely check out cocoforcannabis.com. Thank you again for joining us, Doc. Next, we have Matthew Gates.
Yeah, really good session. I really enjoyed the chat. Shout out to the chat. Shout out to anyone from Lemon Hoko's podcast who is on here as well. I really appreciate the support, and I'll be seeing you guys more often in the Discord server. If you're interested in more integrated pest management content and education, there are three places you can find it. The first one is on my YouTube channel, Zenthanol, which is where I put most of the highest quality educational content that I make. The second place is Instagram at SyncAngel, and also on Twitter at SyncAngel. Also, I am going to be giving a presentation at the first inaugural cannabis aquaponics webinar. I believe that's the title.
Yep. October 3rd and 4th.
October 3rd and 1st. Me in particular will be speaking on the 3rd at 10 a.m. PST. So if you want to hear me talk about IPM and some of the important contextual points with aquaponics in particular, please sign up or in some way, shape, or form, get there or be nowhere.
That's a good way of putting it. And I will say highest quality is an understatement. The quality of content that you put on YouTube is like college level, just like absolutely like, you could get a degree if you watched all of Matthew's YouTube videos because there's so much detail and sourcing and just quality information on there, whether it's entomology or other things. It's a fantastic, the Zenthanol YouTube page where he's been commenting on this particular live stream today is full of amazing content, hours and hours of it. So definitely make sure to go back and watch some of that catalog. And thank you again, Matthew, for joining us. I think Brandon is the last panelist before I go over to Rob. Brandon, you haven't given your sign off yet, have you?
Nope, I haven't. What's going on, cannabis community and all the listeners? I'm Brandon Rust. You can find me on Instagram at RustBrandon. You can also find a link to my page, to my business, Bokashi Earthworks, where I sell biofertilizers, lots of microbes, just like what you're seeing right here. Biocontrols, Buveria bossiana, Trichoderma, Bacillus subtilis, effective microorganisms, working on my list. So I'm just getting everything ready to launch the website here soon, just finishing some back end stuff, and that's going to be live, and I'll be dropping a seed line here real shortly, and just can follow along, see all the different stuff. I'm always happy to be here, and I look forward to be doing it again next week.
I love the dedication that you have to the plant. The passion is so clearly there. I mean, your business and your other business and your other business are all cannabis business related, even if they're not. I mean, Bokashi can be used on cannabis and all that good stuff. So it's cool to see you so wholeheartedly diving into this career and accepting it and as that is who you are. I'm glad to see you having success, and I wish you continued success with all your projects moving forward. That being said, the last person, our special guest this evening, Rob, thank you again for joining us. You can give your final shout outs.
Yeah, thanks, Jack, for having me. And first off, I'm so grateful for you continuing to do what you're doing here on a weekly basis, and really enjoy the time and enjoy watching the shows when I'm not on it. And, you know, I don't grow. I'm particularly different from the rest of the panelists right now. I grew for a long time, but I love learning about the plant. So it's not just me being here and sharing what I know through acquired knowledge, but it's also an opportunity to, like, you know, do my job as a podcaster as well and learn from you guys. So thank you very much for sharing your knowledge. And, I know an interview coming up with Jack, and we just got to get that scheduled, and Kyle, and anybody else that wants to be on the Homegrown Helpers, even the audience, you know, if that's what I do is talk to other home growers. So feel free to go to thehomegrownhelpers.com/apply or just DM me and we'll set something up and we'll chat. Other places to find me is Atlas Plant Trainer. That's my product designed to train and support your plants in any direction, size, shape that you want. And then I'm the producer of GrowCast, and we have our membership program that's currently taking in new members right now. The other thing that I wanted to mention is we're doing a trim bag giveaway on October 1st. Go to mygrowpass.com/giveaway. Just enter in, and October 1st at 4:20, we're drawing it. Changing some outdoor growers' life, hopefully.
Yeah, Twisted Roots,
a bunch of time.
He said he went through like several pounds in a few hours, where the last harvest the year before, when he didn't have the bag, it took him like weeks to go through all the trimming. So,
and honestly, like, I'm always amazed at the quality of product that comes out of it. Most people would knock it because it's, you know, you're tossing around your buds in a bag, and I did for a long time, but the stuff always comes out better than I expected to.
That's a good thing to hear. I know Smiley's Garden in the chat for a little bit. He's used it as well with a positive review. And for people that have to do large amounts and they can't hire trim crews for whatever reason, like safety purposes in a red state or whatever reason, maybe you don't have the funding to do so, or maybe you just can't trust people for one reason or another, being able to use a bag. And some people will trim all their best top buds and then maybe use their lowers and their mid buds in the bag. So there's lots of strategies to making it successful. So I always say, don't knock it till you try it. People love to shit on like my herbs now, and they've never even used it before. I used it and I actually like it, but a lot of people...
Jack, I just wanted to say one last thing. The community, you know, we've talked about it in the chat a lot tonight, and like the community and how we all kind of, are everywhere with everybody else. And, you know, Dr. Coco, you know, graciously shares his time, and you share your time, and, you know, there's a bunch of podcasts, and they're all in this, you know, chat, you know, supporting what you guys are doing here. And it's just a really awesome community that you built around this, and that we've all built around what we're all doing. And just shout out to everybody that's watching and the panelists that make this happen every week.
For sure. And with that said, I don't want to go too long, because after we hit 6 o'clock here on the West Coast or 9 o'clock on the East Coast, we start going into the Michigan Bros Grow Show, which happens for 2 hours. Normally a Spartan Grown. He is one of our panel members. He told me, though, that he wasn't going to be able to make it this week. He's okay. Everything's all good. He just couldn't make the show this week. But shout out to Spartan Grown. I am at Jack Greenstock, as you can see on my little banner up behind me when I lean out of the way. And I'm filling in, like I said, for Shane of the Cheap Home Grow podcast. I love everyone here in the community. It's really awesome to see it growing. There's so many different shows. Eagle Gardens is in the chat. He's got a show, Fucking Talking Shit with Eagle. It comes on every single night, about 8:30 on the West Coast, 11:30 on the East Coast. And he's been in the chat graciously supporting with a lot of the other listeners, like Rob just mentioned, that you see in all the different chats and panels and things like that. So it's cool to see the community blending and going from one show to the other, showing that growers love all around, and everybody seeking that knowledge and trying to be the best grower they can be, most informed they can be. And that's what it's all about. So this is Jack Greenstock. Thank you all for coming and listening, and I'm signing out.
Grower love, everyone.
Happy growing.